in the Senate Revenue Committee Monday, May 9th. Welcome, Senator Starr, back. You're feeling better?
Feeling better.
Good.
Yeah. Got a lot of rest over the weekend and feeling much better.
We moved into a new house this weekend, so we got zero rest.
I'm sure.
The whole weekend. And then Senator George was in Nashville with a biker convention, which is three very different ways to spend the weekend.
That's right.
A Christian biker, I should say.
No. This was there was Hell's Angels there.
Oh. No. Okay. It's not bike for Christ.
Senator Brzezinski, how did you spend your weekend?
Staying close to the home court as much as possible.
Okay, so you had the most, by far, non-eventful weekend.
Got 140-something miles on the bike, so I felt pretty good on that. So.
Oh, wow. 140 miles.
That's pretty eventful.
Mazin, how about you?
Well, I was putting together a basketball hoop for my girls. Yeah. It took about 7.5 hours.
Then you read the instructions?
I did. This is with reading the instructions.
So is it up and functional?
It's up and functional finally. And I had to take it apart a few times, but
well, I'll slow down through the streets of Tiger then to make sure I don't interrupt a basketball game. Of your daughters. We should have a relatively quick day today. We have just Treasury bills, and we'll just go right down the list. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2031.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2031 is a Treasury bill, and the bill is not complicated. It allows basically the treasurer to come up and live up to the times. This is probably prompted by the new standards of the Check 21. Previously, the banking institutions needed to go to a clearinghouse by 3 o'clock in the afternoon and actually swap the checks in order to clear different transactions, and they had to present the instrument itself. The Check 21 new standards allows for an image facsimile or an electronic image, and this is, I think, attempts to catch up to the technology and the time.
Catching up with the times. Darren Bond will bring us into the new millennia.
That's the goal. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Darren Bond, Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. Mazin covered it exactly. The current language contemplates paper transactions. Currently, we accept cash letters electronically from the bank. We pay based on that. We get electronic presentment of the items. We distribute that to the agencies and charge them accordingly. This language just reflects that electronic age versus that paper age when the statutes were originally written.
Great. Questions for Mr. Bond? How'd you spend your weekend?
I was landscaping in my mother-in-law's new place.
It's good Mother's Day. Yeah?
Yeah, she thought so.
I think you're up next, so if you want to, you're welcome to stay or however you want to close public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2031.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Starr.
I move House Bill 2031 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2031 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Close the work session and assign. Senator Starr, would you like to?
Love to.
Help bring the Treasury into the new century. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2032.
Yes. Mr. Chair and the members of the committee, again, the House Bill 2032 is also an issue brought by the state treasurer. And this has to do with the requirements for bonding and showing of cash flow projections for different agencies and different entities that the treasurer does the bonding work and the bonding scrutiny for. Some of these obligations and some of these transactions do not necessarily need as rigorous cash flow projections and the other requirements that are required by the larger, more complicated instruments of debt. COPs, for example, also don't need that. And this bill allows the treasurer to set these different standards by administrative requirements and allow them to work accordingly, so they don't have to have the same complicated standards for all types of debts of that time. It doesn't have revenue or a fiscal impact.
Laura, I'm left with the call. I guess, Darren, you're not up on this. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, Laura Lockwood McCall, Oregon State Treasury Debt Management Division, to the chair. I don't really have anything to add to the bill other than this will provide us a little bit more flexibility. We anticipate that really the only ones that we wouldn't do the same level of rigorous cash flow analysis would be the COPs that have been mentioned, as well as for 11G general obligation bonds for higher ed, which simply requires a simple match, and then it's a general fund allocation of debt service. In the future, there's bills, Senate bills 4 and 5, which talk about seismic bonds that are general obligation bonds, depending on how those are structured. In the future, those might also be just simple, straightforward general fund allocations for debt service without a real cash flow allocation or analysis. Thank you.
So the main concern, I think, when we at least see the title and read the bill, is just, do you lose any oversight or accountability? Or, I mean, you're going to be the expert on that, but...
Currently, this is just bringing current standard practices in line with bringing law in line with standard practices. On a practical basis, we will do as rigorous analysis as necessary, but we think we should probably make sure state law is in conformance with what we're doing on a practical basis.
Senator George, did you have a...
Yeah, I did. It appears, and I was a little bit concerned when I first looked at the subject, and I'm sorry I didn't read it until I got here, but it appeared that the concern I had was whether, in fact, we might be violating the Constitution by having agencies move into, operating in the red without authority. But it appears, and I'm looking at lines 12 through 16, and that there's plenty of responsibility to ensure that, in fact, they are meeting the obligation of law and Constitution, but requirements by the Treasurer's Office.
Through the Chair, Senator George, yes, indeed. This is really more from an administrative oversight perspective to make sure that we aren't creating something that you can't really create out of a COP, for example. It's just a lease payment.
Mm-hmm.
So we can create a spreadsheet, but that's really about all that there really is to it.
Other questions from Ms. McCall? Thank you very much. Close public hearing. Open the discussion on House Bill 2032.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2032 to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2032 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator George, would you like to...
Sure, I'm enjoying hearing that one. Okay. Thanks.
Senator Metzger?
Yes, sir.
We have all talked about what we did over the Mother's Day weekend, but would like to hear from you on that one.
Came down here to Salem, where my niece is, and my mother came down as well, and we celebrated Mother's Day at her house.
In Salem?
Yeah, right here in Big Salem.
Oh, great. Great. That's.
We had beef kebabs. We had strawberry shortcakes. What else would you like to know?
Yeah.
Gave Mom a fuchsia.
plants. Beef kebabs and strawberry. That doesn't seem like actually a very good combo.
Oh, it was excellent. I'm glad you weren't there. You would have not taken some away from me.
Yeah, it's interesting. Every other member said that, too, that they're glad that I wasn't present at their mother's day.
Okay. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2041.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2041 stays on the same theme. It, however, modifies the what the definition of an issuer is are when it comes to the private activity bonds. The private activity bonds are bonds that are issued and take advantage of the cap that the state gets from the federal government. And in the statutes as we have it today, the definition is so specific that the entity needs to be a government agency or a government entity. That is not necessarily what the federal requirements are. So in many ways, it seems like our Oregon law is tighter when it is meant to give ability to utilize these private activity bonds than the federal cap have meant them to be. Also, it has no revenue impact or fiscal impact.
Kate Richardson and Cynthia Ferns.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Kate Cooper Richardson, Oregon State Treasury. I've passed around some testimony to you that says in many more words what Mazin just said. That is the extent of the bill. The Treasurer's Office staffs the Private Activity Bond Committee, and in taking a look at how this statute has developed over the years, our definition of governmental unit was more restricted than Congress had anticipated, and we wanted to ensure that any eligible entity could apply for private activity bond cap that's allocated to the Private Activity Bond Committee to allocate among various entities. So that's all this bill does. I do want to make a note that the reference to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department is superfluous, so removing it here isn't going to restrict that department at all for applying for a volume cap. And Cynthia is also here in case you have any questions about private activity bond.
Questions for Ms. Burns or Ms. Richardson? Ms. Richardson had a good Mother's Day gift. I guess it came a couple days early. Her son was just admitted to Dartmouth, and I think he accepted.
He did.
So her son is off to Dartmouth next.
It's a very expensive Mother's Day.
Yeah, I'm going to ask about the scholarship that went with it.
A little bit.
But not enough.
Not enough.
That's
well, the
true.
College savings plan that the treasurer's office opened.
Yeah, yeah, I should have started about 20 years before he was right. born.
Still probably.
It'll be worthwhile, and we're thrilled.
Yeah, yeah. I guess back to 2041. Any questions or thoughts folks have? Senator George, did you?
I was just going to say she doesn't look old enough to have a child at that age.
Ah, but I have a daughter graduating from college this year and heading off to law school. So, thank you very much.
You have three in college.
So I have one in high school, one in college, and one in graduate school.
One in grad. Wow. College savings plan doesn't. You'd have to be in early and often to get that one.
That's right.
Ms. Burns, any we're a tough committee this morning. We're
thrilled. You want to hear about Mother's Day? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I really am here just to answer questions. This question did come into the Department of Justice, and we concluded that we couldn't get over sort of the plain meaning hump of a governmental unit to extend to certain types of qualified 501c3 organizations that are eligible under the federal tax code, but apparently not under Oregon law, seemingly not under Oregon law.
So I guess the question, what would be an example? I'm trying to think of a hypothetical that we passed this, and here's an example of how this would play out. And
well, the situation that came up last year was with respect to a qualified scholarship corporation, and these are organizations, 501c3 organizations that are created to create a secondary market for student loan bonds. They provide more liquidity in the student loan area, and under the federal tax code, they have for a long time been a qualified issuer of private activity bonds if they get the approval of a governmental entity. And if you get a state sort of request to enter into this function or a local government request to enter into this function, then under the federal tax code, they would be treated either as a state issuer or a local government issuer. But because our statute read that we could allocate volume cap only to governmental units, we couldn't conclude that we could allocate the state's volume cap to this private entity, even though under the federal tax code it would have been a qualified issuer. So a 501c3 for qualified student loan bonds. There are certain other types of 501c3s. Many of them have their own sort of independent authority. So qualified student loan bonds are the ones that this came in to address.
So, and they're bonding, I mean, this is somewhat of a naive question, but they're bonding the need that they would have to fund the scholarships at present day?
Right. They would issue bonds and get the money in, and then they could issue student loans directly, or they would buy the student loans. What the entity here was proposing was, say, U.S. Bank or somebody issues student loans, and then they would resell them to this organization. And they also would have provided some student loan assistance in terms of counseling on going into debt at the age of 18 and things like that. Huh.
And so y'all take a look at it at DOJ and say,
We thought that the Supreme Court, when it applies its methodology, it emphasizes heavily the text of the statute and the plain meaning of the words. And so, you know, to most people, governmental unit doesn't include a 501c3.
Yeah,
we couldn't get over that problem.
Are we in any way opening up an arena that we would not intend to with other like organizations that then would interact with the Treasurer's Office? Are we opening up a door that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are opening the statute more broadly to capture all the entities that are qualified to apply under the congressional language. But there is the Private Activity Bond Committee, whose job is to determine what public benefit or how to allocate that for the greatest public benefit. So there is a check on it, and we don't believe that it's opening beyond what Congress had contemplated.
And who's on that private activity bond?
It's made up of three members: the director of the Department of Administrative Services, the treasurer, and a public member.
And who's that public member to?
Ruby Hoffman. Ruby Hoffman.
Oh, Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions for the panel?
Mr. Chair, I think there are examples of operating agencies today that do under these statutes. Can you just give an example?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, some agencies receive private activity volume cap already directly, and that would be housing, OECDD, energy, and the Oregon Facilities Authority. And then the private activity bond committee, it's the remainder of that, of the volume cap that's allocated to the state by the federal government. And then it allocates that on a transaction-specific basis. Some of those agencies, like OECDD, do come in also and apply housing also to the private activity bond committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2041 and open a work session on House Bill 2041.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Charles Starr.
I move House Bill 2041 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2041 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Metzger?
Sure, do it.
Thank you.
Change the name of, yeah, I can do that.
Close that works. The final bill for Monday, May 9th, is House Bill 2033. Imagine we're going to have a busy day on the floor when these come up, especially for yourself.
Yes.
What is this bill?
Well, 2033, Mr. Chair, follows 2031 and 2032. Just 2041 just made it in between. So this bill actually got amended during the way it started in your parallel committee of the House Avenue Committee. It got amended at that time. Now it comes to you as an A, engrossed, and I think that the discussion around this bill has been around how to fine-tune it in order to allow for the credit unions to take advantage of this bill as the other assumptions of who would take the most advantage of it. The law at this time, or under current law, the deposits of public funds into financial institutions need to have collateral or collateralized agreements on all funds. This bill started the idea of it that there is insurance up to 100,000 in financial institutions of the different kinds exist before on or without this requirement as is. So those funds are already covered and secured accordingly by these existing insurances. So to allow these funds to move, and especially for the banks who don't have to live up to all that collateralization, will probably provide more movement. Now, the credit unions, when they're allowed to do this, they're also covered by insurance, but in the same time, I think they're capped in current law that they can't deal with the above 100,000 to start with anyhow. So the whole requirement for them doesn't really have any need for it, because they can't go above that limit, and at the same time, under that limit, they're insured. And I think we're still looking at a no revenue impact and no fiscal impact for this proposition.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I'm reading the description of the bill, what the bill does, and it says that credit unions would be limited by the level of the deposit insurance coverage. So there's no risk there. In other words, if we put those dollars into credit union, those are secure dollars. And
yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator George, they up to $100,000 are covered already by insurance. But above the 100,000, I don't think they're allowed to have or deal with that much amounts to start with as in federal funds. So, in that sense, the language would be redundant for them if it is there.
Okay. Darren Bonds and Pam Levitt. No Pfeiffer. Just Pam Levitt now. Was it ever Pam Pfeiffer Levitt?
Not really.
No.
Not a great chance.
Not to keep.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. Most of what you see in House Bill 2033 is just organizational in nature, inserted by Ledge Council to make it read better. The few substantive issues, Mazin pointed out, the primary one, which is collateralization agreements for institutions that hold less than $100,000. Currently, to hold public funds at all, you have to enter an agreement with the treasurer and a custodian bank. For credit unions or for other financial institutions that aren't going to hold more than $100,000 or the insured amounts, it makes no sense. It's costly. They have to have their agreements reviewed by council. They have to have it approved by their board at a board meeting. It has to be reflected in their minutes. It's somewhat costly for us in that we have to manage it. So it just makes no sense, and this change will reflect that with no degradation to the security of public funds at all.
So is that provision just due to the fact that of legislation we passed last legislative session?
That's what brought it to the fore, and because we limited credit unions to $100,000 as we looked at this to address the credit union problem. We also realized there are other financial institutions that hold deposits of less than $100,000, and they're also caught in this net. So, and come to find out that as we dealt with this, my staff informed me that they have complaints from small banks that have had to address this issue in the past as well. But so this will relieve a burden on them as well as the credit unions.
And how does it ensure no degradation of?
They're completely insured with 100%. So collateral will never come into play.
Because of the insurance. Okay.
Yeah. Section 4 of the bill, a couple of the other changes. there's an inconsistency between ORS Chapter 294 and ORS 295 in that time deposits are called out as an authorized investment in ORS Chapter 294 for local governments. At the same time, ORS Chapter 295 looks at authorized investments and says they're exempt from that statute. At the same time, in other parts of Chapter 295, CDs are specifically addressed. So looking back at legislative history, looking at when those changes were made, it's apparent that that there was an oversight when the language was placed in ORS 2. Anyway, to us, it's apparent that there's an oversight that when the language was placed in 294 authorizing certificates of deposit and other time deposits, there wasn't a link made to Chapter 295. So what this does is this clarifies that any time deposits purchased by a local government are subject to the protections afforded in ORS Chapter 295 through collateralization of those funds. The other changes in Section 4, in Subsection B or 1B, that's the request of the Department of Justice to clarify the flow of funds through the state's custodian bank. This custodian plays an administrative role as opposed to a directed investment role, and that language is captured there. In Subsection C, it clarifies that negotiable certificates of deposit are exempt from the chapter. Negotiable CDs are actively traded money market instruments, often used in a short-term cash portfolio like the Oregon Short-Term Fund, by their very nature not subject or eligible for collateralization, and therefore, without a specific distinction in 295, we're not able to invest in them. And so this clarifies that and clarifies the distinction between standard and negotiable CDs. The amendments in the bill that Mazin referred to by the banking community were referencing the $100,000 exemption for agreements with the treasurer's office, and it clarified the language and cleaned up the language that we had drafted. So, have any questions?
Ms. Levitt.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Pam Levitt, Credit Union Association of Oregon. You have my written testimony, and Darren explained the bill very well. We see this as a fix to the bill we passed last session, Senate Bill 331, which introduced the ability of credit unions to accept public funds. We limited the bill at deposits of $100,000, and after the session ended, we realized that this custodian and pool manager requirement was going to be burdensome to the credit union. So this is a fix that will be very helpful. The treasurer's office has been kind enough to have a temporary fix in place, but this legislation will put a permanent fix in place.
So what was the temporary fix? So we passed the bill. You have some credit unions who say, okay, we've got customers here.
Mm-hmm.
We meet the test. Mm-hmm. We're in.
We make and enter into the agreements.
So you just enter it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's the... I'm not sure exactly what temporary fix is either. We did specifically draft an agreement for credit unions, and we did go obviously to that expense, which in retrospect was unnecessary. But it's the only way we could implement the law on behalf of the credit unions at the time.
And how many of the agreements were there?
I believe right now we have four.
Yeah, there's
three or four credit unions that are currently holding public funds deposits,
mm-hmm. and several looking at them.
Several more mm-hmm. that are considering,
mm-hmm.
or
mm-hmm.
and we pass this, and those agreements then vanish, and this becomes the governing reality because of the insurance issue.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Questions or comments for this panel? Great, thank you, Pam. Mother's Day.
Very nice. Yes, I have to say, though, I spend most of my time putting together toys, and with the 3 and a 5-year-old, it's very timely. I understand the 8 hours of putting together.
You didn't get the whole neighborhood to help you.
Yeah.
That's why it's okay.
So I must be missing out. I have not had those, 3 to 8 hour... Maybe I'm going to hear about that after this hearing.
Your time is coming, I assure you.
Yeah, that's more complex stories.
All in good terms.
Bankers, nothing on this? Great. Okay. Our folks, well, let's close the public hearing.
Open a work session.
Okay. Open a work session on House Bill 2033. Senator Metzger.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2033 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and also declare a potential conflict of interest as my company does work for credit unions.
Senator Metzger's move House Bill 2033 to the floor with due pass recommendation. 2033A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Metzger, credit unions are near and dear to. Would you like to carry the bill?
Sure, happy to do so.
Great. Senator Metzger will carry the bill. We are concluded. Barbara, I've got to think that this was a great Mother's Day for you. Her son is back from Baghdad and now a civilian, but had to be nice to have him home for Mother's Day, or at least. Partly home. Is he in Oregon or Virginia?
He's back in Virginia.
So are you perfect?
And he comes back to law school.
His heart's still there.
Yeah, he bet.
Mr. Chair, there's still some people in the audience who didn't tell us about what they did on the weekend.
That's true. But there's one or two that we'd like to hear from, and then Mr. Dewey, and I can't see everyone back there, but Mr. Martinez, we don't want to know.
Okay.
We had very endearing stories and very heartwarming, and I don't think we want to end it on a low note.
Story that.
Thank you. We are adjourned till 9 tomorrow.